Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Jake from West London, and you're listening to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, why are houses usually square? Okay, here comes the show, and remember, question everything.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast with myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dame Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer.
Oh, hello.
And a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we are talking everything from...
We are talking everything from Jake from West London's question, why are houses usually square? Dane,
interesting.
Dane, can you be bothered to come on? Where'd you?
Yeah, Howard, that's the theme of our podcast.
Why are they square?
I feel like it's structural efficiency. I think maybe having to make things round probably costs a lot more and takes a lot more time to have
takes up too much space.
Curved beams and having a curved roof might be quite difficult. So, Jake, I really think it's down to structural efficiency. I'm sure at some point people have experimented with circular housing or spherical housing, but I think that the logistics of it probably makes it very difficult. I imagine if there's some load bearing and some foundational issues that would arise from having the diameter of the circle taking most of the weight or taking less of the weight. I mean, I have no idea about how architecture works.
No, but we know you've got to pack as many people in as humanly possible in as short, small amount of space as possible, and that's why they're square, Jake.
Yeah, in the same way. So I guess houses work the same way that chocolates do. You get to fit more in a square box.
Correct. But suffice to say, on this podcast, we ask and answer all the questions, don't we, Dane?
Absolutely. No question will be condemned or unsafe to pine upon or live within. And also, no question's integrity or structure of its integrity is too poor for us to address. So if you do like the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify, and you'll never miss an episode. Or you can subscribe to us on Acast, the world's biggest podcast network, where you can hear all of the very special questions being asked and answered by our very special guests. With that being said, on today's show is a British singer, songwriter, producer, and model. Her hit single, Shark in the Water, helped her debut album, Travelling Like the Light, sell over 1 million copies in the US alone, as well as propelling her to the top of the charts in France. She's a songwriter for hire for acts such as the Pussycat Dolls and the Sugar Babes. Alongside her musical achievements, she has written articles for The Guardian and various national newspapers and has become more involved in journalistic endeavours. She is currently working on launching the Say Something Collective charity and will work on activism for change in the arts, supporting artists from marginalised communities. The collective has their first exhibition debuting this year in 2022. Please welcome to the podcast an amazing all-round polyglot / polymath who also joined me as a panelist on Unapologetic. It can only be Miss Vivi Brown.
Woo 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 woo! I feel quite big-headed, just woo woo wing for myself.
Yeah, but you're excited. It's nice to see someone really excited to be on the show, Dane.
I'm humbled and flattered, and I hope we can reciprocate the same level of excitement and anticipated excitement for having you on the show, Vivi. We said we'd make this happen when we met on Unapologetic, so it's so nice to finally have you here. A couple
Indeed.
Questions, just some preamble questions. First one, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
Whew. Well, I'm a mother and I'm tired.
That should have been at the top of this bio.
Yeah, but it gets weird if I start doing that. Like, then some people are single. We don't want to put that out in their biogs. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. But yeah. a British accomplished mother singer-songwriter.
Sure.
Et al.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm real good. It's sunny outside and
helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a good day. It's a good day.
And in listeners, Vivi's a fan of the show. So I'm not saying that with great surprise, but it's just nice to say that Vivi's a fan of the show.
I am indeed. It's great. Yeah.
Any episodes you recommend to our new listeners? I've never done this before. Ask a guest to recommend.
Put me on the spot.
Anyway, anyone who's entering into the question everything sphere at a beginner or introductory level, and any particular guests or episodes you recommend? Which is not the question we want to ask you, but you know, we'd like to hear back from the people
just while we're here.
You put me on the spot a bit. Let me think. The Marvin Harrison one, I thought was really good.
I got emotional with that one. I felt quite emotional. Marvin makes me emotional as a man, I'd say.
Yeah, and also you had Shazia Mirza, is that right?
Yeah,
the comedian. I think that she's incredible. I actually interviewed her on a podcast I did about 2 years ago, and I was in stitches and crying of laughter. Her story is just absolutely amazing. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. So, yeah.
There you go. Nice. There you go, listeners. There's some recommendations for you.
Also, listeners, the incumbent VV Brown episode is highly recommended. So...
Oh, yeah.
Look out just wait out for that one. It's coming very, very soon.
It's probably time for a question, isn't it, Dane, as the format of this show dictates?
Which Vivi is very familiar with. So as our very esteemed guest, we invite you to ask the first question, which can be any question you would like, which Howard and I would like to discuss with you for about 15 minutes. And then Howard here would like to also pose you a question, which we'd also like to ask you for 15 minutes or some change. And in the vein of remixes of songs, I'd like to ask you a question, which we discuss for about the same amount of time. And after which, we'd like you to tell our good listeners where they can find out about your good and expansive works, past, present, and future. How does that sound?
Sounds brilliant.
Floor is, of course, yours to ask the first question.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. So I had to really think about this because there are so many questions.
Thankfully.
So the question I want to ask you is, if you were going to dinner... And you had the opportunity to invite 10 guests from anywhere in the world, living or dead, to have a conversation. Who would you invite and why?
Do I have to have all 10? I don't know if I like that many people around when I eat, really.
Or maybe, let's say five.
Okay.
Let's say five. 10's quite a lot.
don't let Howard influence your question, because if you wanted to pick up 10 Arsenal players, he could do it, Vivi.
There's 10 people.
Testimonial.
I can't speak to them all at the same time. And, you know, it's going to be awkward because I'm going to see, you know, someone at the end of the table be like, I'm not sitting next to them.
But Howard, they could be like footballers. Think of it that way. So five other people could be footballers who just talk amongst themselves. But, you know, it's Vivi's question. So she stipulates the terms.
You can be totally strategic with this. I'm all good. Yeah. I'm all good.
What made you think about this? Is that because you're, you know, exhausted having food with your daughters, your children every all the time, and you want some different company?
I'm always hungry.
Right.
Because I'm greedy. So it always has to revolve around some kind of situation with food. But I don't know. I just thought that it would be interesting. It displays perhaps what questions you might have for them, or the conversations, or, you know, your interests, or perhaps your passions.
And also, I think it's one of the strongest indicators of a, I'd say, positive or prosperous or viable relationship of any kind, whether it's platonic or romantic. Can I eat with this son of a bitch? That's how you know a relationship is going to work. Can I sit there while this person is putting food in their mouth, and can I still bear to be around them? Can I be? Because that's the thing I think people leave out. We always focus on, like, you know, the physical, sexual aspects of relationships or couplings, or maybe the monetary aspects of it. But I already think that eating is a very intimate human practice. And, you know, they say the family that eats together stays together. You know, music is the food of love. So there's a very close link between food, human expression, and their creativity. So the question makes perfect sense. I totally get it. Tell a lot about someone.
Will that person eat from my plate?
Oh, no, surely not. That's the worst kind of person.
Because I'm like, no.
Are you quite tyrannical with the plate?
These are my chips.
I've never known that joy. As a cisgender heterosexual man, my plate is open to the world, as it should be. I don't get plate privilege. Neither should I. But I don't know. I am Howard.
Yeah, I've got a few people in my head. Are we talking people who are dead as well, or not?
Living or dead, Howard?
Living or dead. Anybody. Right. You can even say Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, the Jewish relationship with people having Jesus for dinner didn't kind of work out too well. He only came for dinner once, and it never really, you know, I don't think he ever came back wasn't into the chicken soup, whatever. No, I think Dave mentioned I'm a football fan. I'm an Arsenal fan, for good or for bad. So, you know, Arsene Wenger is the ultimate guy to hang around as an Arsenal fan, more so than any player. You know, the guy was at the club for 20 years. Probably get a bit of gossip out of him. A few true stories that I don't know. So Arsene Wenger would be my football candidate to be at the dinner table. And I know he's good. He's a good talker. He'd be up for it. And, you know, probably not too picky. He'll be interested in what's for dinner, but he wouldn't, you know. I think that'll be a fine pick, Dane. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that Arsene Wenger, being an unabashedly unashamed, culturally astute Frenchman, would be very sensitive to you, the hawk cuisine that you serve at your dinner, Howard. So
yeah.
I think it's a good choice. Should we go, Howard? Would it be easy if we went back and forth?
Perfect. Yeah, and then we'll combine this team. Go on, then. So who are you going to go for?
So, Dave? Vivi, just for the sake of brevity, and so Howard doesn't panic too much at this dinner, can we do five each?
Yeah.
And then
perfect.
We fill at the table.
That's all good. Yeah, all good with me.
Maybe try and reduce our carbon footprint. The first person I think I have at the table is the late comedian Dick Gregory.
Yeah.
Okay.
First of all, he'd have very specific dietary requirements because he's one of the first people that was in the public eye to champion a vegan and then later a raw fruit and veg diet. He was definitely very health focused. I am particularly inspired by him because after transcending his career and becoming nationally famous, he almost turned his back on his career, but he compromised his career opportunities because he wanted to be a part of the civil rights movement in America. So he marched alongside Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and had very close relationships with Muhammad Ali and stuff as well. So I just think anyone, most iconoclasts from that particular era were probably around for one of the biggest points of social flux within the Western world. And I just love to pick his brain about his experiences and also consult his advice or go to him for counsel about how we can, as artists and creatives, continue to positively affect change within our society.
So we've got an iconic comedian, an iconic football manager. I'm going to move to music. Okay. I think we need to keep the mixture of people. I was actually listening to an interview a little while ago, and I thought she's a great. It seemed like a great person. I never hear from her enough. Is Aretha Franklin, who I think was a very, very strong character. You know, if anyone starts pissing around too much, I think she'll keep order. But also, and it lived an incredible life. I'm sure, very, very opinionated. God rest her soul when she was alive, and full of yes. good energy. There's a lot of good energy when I think of Aretha Franklin. A lot of positive energy. I don't want this to be a too serious. I don't want it to be just silly. I don't want it to be a food fight because that seems a waste of these people, but. I think Aretha would be...
It could be fun. Yeah.
And I think, next her and Arsene Wenger, I'm sure they'll have plenty to talk about. I mean, she won't really care about the successes of Arsenal in the kind of 21st century, but...
Hey, you never know. You never know.
I don't think she ever wrote any songs.
She might love it.
Yeah, I don't think she ever wrote any songs about it, no.
I mean, at the time, how big was Arsenal as a team at the time,
Yeah.
Did we even consider... Well, this is what we find out at the party. Like, how does she feel about, George Graham... departure.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to hear that much from Aretha Franklin about Arsenal, but I do think that she would, sitting between Dick Gregory and Arsene Wenger. There you go. Back to you, Dane. What you got?
Good one. Cool. All right, I got one which begins the surreal guest list. I would like to speak to Isaac, son of Abraham.
Wow.
I'm going to say that, again, I think he'd be a good guest. But I'm going to leave it there. I'm going somewhere with this.
Are you going to cause Howard. Trouble? Is there going to be beef at this dinner party? I just want to have a nice time with these people.
If there's going to be beef, it's going to be kosher because Isaac's here.
Come on. No. I don't have to have a kosher meal. Okay, right. So we've got biblical character Isaac sitting next to Aretha Franklin.
Aretha.
Yeah. this party. That's good. I like that a lot. I think I'd probably start to kind of go towards some of my all-time people that if you're putting me at a dinner party, do I want to talk to them? I want to talk to them about their works, but also their love of art and culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love Martin Scorsese's films. Like, we were going to shout out today at some point to Ray Liotta's sad passing, the star of Goodfellas and other films. Sadly, passed away last week. And I rewatched Goodfellas this weekend and remembered that it's absolutely incredible film. Got an interesting female element to it that I kind of ignored because it's such a blokey loved film. It's a really great film. And talking to Martin Scorsese, he's a good conversationalist, isn't he, Dane? He can talk to everyone, I reckon.
Yeah, I mean, great. Again, someone who's been amazing in depicting the Americana.
Yeah, the American dream, the rise and fall of people, whether it's Wolf of Wall Street or Goodfellas or Casino or Gangs of New York. Or, there's more, probably more.
Well, you know,
what a mix.
Yeah. It's funny you say about you kind of overlook the contribution that women made to these films. But when you think about a lot of Scorsese films, like
strong female characters,
yeah, actresses are the conduit between all of the roles that
Sharon
the men
Stone,
play.
Margot Robbie, and Lorraine Bracco,
exactly.
Goodfellas.
Exactly.
So there you go. There's our first five, Vivi. How are you feeling? Obviously, we've got to ask you, by the way. So you're like number six, right, Dane? Vivi's
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So we got me to name some.
Yeah, we've got four Two. More. Who can we chuck into this mix?
I've got one more.
Go.
Okay.
If I'm invited Isaac, I'm also invited Ibrahim.
Why are you causing trouble at this party, Dane?
I was going somewhere. But Howard, this is the thing. I don't believe just by having the father of two of the biggest Abrahamic religions in the world, there's going to be trouble. My idea is that the family that eats together stays together, Howard.
Absolutely.
So if I can create a paradigm of dining and conversation between these two forefathers of these ideologies.
Very wise men, too.
It's kind of set an example. So it's me basically being like, can we just talk this out here? Because what we're not going to do is create this narrative that's impossible for these two people who are of the same source but have maybe gone into two different divergent paths in their lives are not able to coexist. Trying to represent that on a very small scale. So not only will the beef be kosher, it's also going to be halal, Howard.
Okay, fine. I'm not going to argue with you. If it goes wrong, you're going to have to call the Ubers.
I'm going to take it. But I want to at least offer the opportunity for the discussion. You don't have to sit next to them, Howard.
That's fine. No, that's fine. It's fine. I'm really too busy between Martin Scorsese, Aretha Franklin, and Arsene Wenger.
There you go. All good.
That's a pretty
good...
And Vivi.
Vivi will be there.
Yeah, I know. I'm happy with that.
Howard giving you the evils and making you look at me like this, being like, why did he do this? But I'm going somewhere with this, Howard.
No, it sounds good.
Yeah,
I've got
other people I'd throw into the mix. I think I want someone who probably doesn't let their hair down, and let's see what they... me and Dane often talk about this filmmaker called Adam Curtis, a documentary maker. Yeah. I mean, he's a very geeky guy in many respects, but I bet he'd have a right laugh at this party. Like, once we all get a few drinks, he gets a bit philosophical. He'll be vital, someone like that there. Like he's a philosopher, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. And you want that. I think that's within the realm of ability for all of our dinner guests. I think everyone there, and that's the thing, everyone at this dinner table, I believe so far, is a conversationalist and they're articulate.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's not going to be a point where everyone's like, should we talk about, man? Anyone watched Love Island lately? I don't think we'll get to that point where we start going through like popular culture and tabloids for stories. And so
some deep shit.
Yeah, deep shit.
We'll be going
down. We keep going. Exactly that. Who are
we? We've got room for two more, Dane. Have you got anyone else? Or Vivi? Vivi, let's have a couple from Vivi. Come on, who do you want?
Yeah.
Okay, let me think. It's a toss-up for me between Malcolm X or Princess Diana.
Oh,
have both.
You know,
I want it to be both. So there's no way. Yeah.
But then there's some people, you know, we've had a lot of names here of people that have sadly passed. Mm. God bless their souls. But it maybe there's some people that are kind of here now and they'd be walking into this place also being like overwhelmed by the fact that they would also be meeting people that they would be like, what the?
Yeah.
You know, so,
the reality of walking into a place where some of the most famous people who've died are alive is definitely going to affect people's appetites, I think, for at least the first course.
It would be the best episode of Ghost Hunters that has ever been made. Ever in life. Ever, ever, ever.
Ah, Kanye West.
Oh, nice.
Kanye West in that mix.
Interesting choice.
I think with the biblical characters, it's going to get very messy if Kanye comes. But look, I think you could ask him. I'm not sure he's going to come. Just to let you know, I don't get who we invite. I just wouldn't bet on him turning up.
If he turns he would turn up. Oh, he's coming, Howard.
He'll be late. He'll come for the drink to the end.
He would come. And the thing is, I wouldn't even... we wouldn't have to invite him, really. He just needs to get wind of the fact that this dinner is taking place. Then he shows up and he's like, all right, Aretha, I'm going to let you finish your entrees. I want to be very clear. There's somebody that can unite both Isaac and Ibrahim under the umbrella of a new religion being love led by me. I could do that. And then
I think he'll have some kind of... he'll have a lot of dietary requirements. I don't really want him to come, but that's fine.
I believe we have him design the doggy bags. He'd love that. You know, cause I think as long as Kanye would be able to imprint an aesthetic on it, I think he'd be absolutely fine. You know what I would do? I would have Kanye design the crockery and the cutlery.
And what about the outfits and it ends with a fashion show?
That's what I'm saying. He'd be all over that. He'd be all over that. If we're recreating a Last Supper, we ask Kanye West to do the interior decoration and design the table and design the crockery and cutlery. He would definitely, and all of the upholstery, he'd love that.
Well, I ask one of our more graphically aware listeners to do a Last Supper picture of all of the people we've said. If you could just cut the heads out, put them in there, and you win a prize. I'm making this up.
But, and what we'll do is, Howard, is that we'll try to auction the reprint and all the proceeds will go to a food bank charity.
Done. Oh,
there you go.
Guys, make it an NFT.
Ooh. That's good.
For charity?
Ooh. That's good. Okay. For charity. Yeah,
I'm going to say this now, Vivi, though. If you expect me to continue the conversation at this dinner on NFTs, I'm going to have to move. I'm going to be like, what's that you said, Isaac? I don't know what she's talking about over there. NFTs, I've got no idea. So hard.
It was a very, very good question, though. A very entertaining question. We've talked about a lot of great people. Sadly, many no longer with us, including the biblical characters.
People that are now at the podcast in the sky.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. Very inspiring people, yeah.
The festival in the sky. And that's how I see the other side. I feel like every year when we lose people who are iconic or imprint positively on our species, then they go to a big festival in the sky. And every year that lineup changes and more amazing acts are added to it. Like, can you imagine how good the Afterlife Festival was in like 2016? Remember that year when so many people passed away?
So many good headliners.
Yeah. Lots of headliners. So that festival would have been Coachella on steroids in a rocket ship.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My question this week is a bit different. I mean, if I said the same question, it'd be a bit weird, wouldn't it, really? Maybe one episode I'll do that, Dane. just to see what happens.
The old Groundhog episode when we finally get Bill Murray on the podcast.
Yeah, where we asked the same question three times. I really enjoyed that question. Now my question seems bizarre in comparison, Vivi, so apologies in advance.
It's all right.
But I, you know, tend to cyber stalk the guests before they come on. You like... inspirational quotes.
I do.
I want to make it very clear, I'm not about to take the piss, okay? I'm definitely not about to take the piss. But No, I'm not Danes. Danes laughing like I'm going to take it. I'm not going to take it. I'm genuinely not going to take the piss.
What people normally say before they take the piss.
I'm definitely not about to take the piss.
You can take the piss.
I've found in this last period in my life where I now have a child and feel a little bit more at peace, weirdly, with society and the world, I try to understand things that I don't have appreciation for. So I don't have any appreciation. I looked at them and I thought, my question is this, and it goes to Dane and it goes to any listener who wants to talk about it, is what do these inspirational quotes mean to you? What is it about sharing them that, because I actually do an inspirational quote on this podcast quite a lot. Which is something, and the reason I thought it was interesting is I would never post it. I would never post, and that's just me. That's just the way I feel. But it's always the same thing, right, Dane? It's the happiness equation, which is happiness is reality minus expectations, which is a very,
very
simple basis to live your life. But I don't find myself posting these things. I find it interesting that you do and that people do. So what do these inspirational quotes mean to you?
To me? Well, I grew up in church, right? I grew up with your old lady running down the corridor saying hallelujah, hallelujah, and then she would just smack the child on the side and go back into hallelujah again. I grew up with being empowered by words and by phrases that just make you feel lifted. So it's a part of who I am. I'm a songwriter, so I deal with words. I love writing songs. I love words. So for me, words are so powerful. Words have life to me. And I think that when we speak things in existence or we project them, I believe they can manifest into reality. Like, I really believe that. I really believe it. So for me, like, when I have a quote, if I'm feeling down or I need encouragement or just need to feel empowered, it really works for me to, like, create that energy.
I think that's the word, yeah. Right? That's the key word that comes up when you think, when I think about inspirational quotes is energy. Something it brings to some people, clearly not everyone, that I think really helps people's energy become more positive, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I love a good one. One of my favorite quotes that has got me through life is this one, if you don't mind me saying it. It's do not mistake his delay for denial. He specializes in things impossible. And that is so powerful to me because, you know, in life, sometimes there's so many delays or things that go wrong and you're like, why didn't that happen then? Or why is this happening to me now? But do not mistake that delay for denial.
I mean, because, I work in television, so I know a lot about that. But,
you know, yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. So I love that one because anything is possible. He specializes in things impossible, or the universe specializes in things impossible. So yeah, that's carried me through a long road that I've been on when I'm feeling like I can't make it or something.
But it's interesting you bring up church as well, because arguably, and you know, all due respect to any of our religious listeners, but I'm not a follower of any, I don't follow religion closely. But my God, there's a lot of good inspirational quotes in those books, right, Dane? Like, there's a lot of good stuff in there.
I mean, that's, they got the whole, Psalms is dedicated to the whole thing of having inspirational quotes, really. So, you know.
That's all about lovemaking, that one.
Oh, well, there you go. And it's articulated in such a beautiful way that even God can smile upon the words. I say that at the same time, words and the structuring of words, it's a very interesting technique where you're looking at something like carnality and having sex or lovemaking in religious text. Then words serve as being able to present that idea in a way that is palatable to a very large and potentially diverse audience. So that shows you the power that words and inspirational quotes can have. Yeah, I think there's a lot of inspirational quotes within Bibles, within religious text. I guess because the idea is that you are trying to demonstrate to people using tangible methods, something that is intangible. You're trying to tap into somebody's spirit. And normally there are a few other things outside of the use of controlled substances which can elicit that response. So being able to use words as a trigger to create that state of being in people is obviously very powerful as well. And you know, you'll notice when you hear people speaking within the paradigm of religion or spirituality, the way the sound and words are used is very particular. A lot of time it's low frequency and high vibration, which is why people, when they are reciting hymns, tend to do so in a low vibrating voice because it encourages everyone to join in unison.
Well, if someone shouted at the top of a stage like this, you think, what the, why is that guy shouting at us?
But if you're able to change your tone so it sounds more inclusive and relaxing and mimics the human heartbeat, then everyone joins in. Yeah. As opposed to if someone's loud and shrill, it's more alarmist. So it's not necessarily as inspiring. It's alarming and it can be alerting, but you tend to find that it's a lot more frightening and divisive as opposed to using inspiration in terms of how you deliver. All in the delivery, Howard, is what I'm trying
to
say.
But I think that is a fascinating element of it, this delivery. Like, I don't remember the first time I ever heard, as a Jew, didn't spend a lot of time reading the Bible, but a non-religious Jew, I must stress, but judge not lest ye be judged. That, there's one that I reckon happens to me once or twice a week where I'm like, I don't think those exact words in my head, but I often will think, hang on, you're thinking about this person being a dickhead. You also, I know it's not as polite a way of saying it. I know the back book wouldn't have sold as many copies if you'd been like...
It's accurate.
Yeah. Don't be a dickhead because that person might be a bit of a dickhead is kind of, you know, my, you know, and I think about it a lot, you know, you kind of, oh no, actually I need to try and be understanding, you know.
Yeah. But you're raising a good point, because I guess the reason why inspirational quotes work in that instance is because I guess when you are pondering someone else being a dickhead, for example, what you're able to do is you're able to evoke them, if nowhere else, but in your own mind. And we could argue that if you are not able to physically perceive someone with your five senses, why are they able to bother you? But obviously we understand that our minds, through the process of trauma or experience, can still recreate the same emotions and feelings within ourselves just based on a projection of our minds. So when you think about that, that comes from one voice in your head. So that can be a part of your neuroses or your insecurity, and that can invoke imagery, which can cause you distress. Inspirational quotes then work because you are hearing an external narrative, which can still have a positive effect on you.
Absolutely.
For example, in a capitalist and material or capital focused society, you can't really demonstrate an intrinsic reward for helping other people, because everyone could argue, what's in it for me? Which in itself can be a quote that can inspire people. But then if you maybe counter that by saying, that you do to the least of my brothers, you do unto me, then, you know, most people don't have to understand that literally to understand what that means.
Yeah, it's poetry, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like poetry.
Well, philosophy
as well.
Yeah, doesn't mean
well. And that's the thing with inspirational quotes is that, I guess, it speaks to you in a way that isn't trying to appeal or necessarily please your five senses all the time. But they can be as well. I guess different inspirational quotes can inspire different things all the time. So, you know, you could be like, smells like mama used to make can be a smell that's triggering a particular memory or a certain sense of nostalgia. Or someone saying, your butt looks good in that and I like it.
Yeah.
That can have an effect on your self-image. So inspirational quotes. And I guess inspirational quotes kind of are the rebuttal or antithesis of the idea that sticks and stones can break bones and words can never hurt you. I think that's probably one of the worst inspirational quotes that exist in this society, because we all fucking know that words have much more of an effect on you than fucking sticks and stones can. Yeah. First of all, how often do you fucking find sticks in the street? Not very. Whereas, you know, if someone says, I hereby sentence you to, that's going to hurt you a lot more than a stick and stone is.
Yeah.
Like if someone's going to be like, and I hereby sentence you to life imprisonment, or they say, I'm going to throw a few sticks and stones at you, you might go for those sticks and stones if you're not in Saudi Arabia. The idea human beings, so much of our understanding of reality is so conceptual and cerebral that this is where most of our reality begins. And then all of our other actions are based on our reaction to what we perceive as our reality, because reality is a factor of perception, which is why happiness is reality minus expectation, because expectation pertains to a concept we have in our head, which then depending on how close it is to our reality, can dictate what our happiness level is. So that's an example of an inspirational quote. So an inspirational quote, I guess, shows you that it can elicit a response from you, even if you don't have to be actively engaged in a conversation with somebody else. I guess that's why religious texts work so well, is that even though none of the people that wrote that stuff are still around, you can still read it and be like, oh my goodness, it still holds the same weight that it did 2,000 years ago.
And it goes beyond religion as well, you know, like there's so much beauty and so much poetry, because there is a real art coming from us being a songwriter. There's a real art in simplicity in writing. It's really hard to write a simple sentence that is powerful than a really complicated one.
Yeah.
And a lot of these quotes are put together. They are beautifully orchestrated, where there's such simplicity, but there's such power, there's such conviction. To me, like, the best pop songs or the best hip-hop tracks or the best, I mean, we can talk about hip-hop all day long when it comes to motivational quotes. That basically, to me, is almost part of hip-hop culture. But yeah, I love it because of there's a simplicity. One of my other favorite quotes is by James Baldwin. He says, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. And that's such a beautiful quote because it's so simple, and he's played with the words and he's kind of used them and then used them as opposites on each side of the sentence. So yeah, I think I find it to be, when you find really good quality motivational quotes, I see it as poetry and a real journey of literature almost. Like it's a real...
And that's why the internet is a horribly dark, twisted place, isn't it? Because people's eyes are so cynical most of the time when they're scrolling through the pictures of people by swimming pools and eating lattes and, you know, cat videos and stuff. That to stop and give some of the respect that you're talking about to the kind of poetry, literature, philosophy, you know, whatever you want to term what inspirational quotes actually are, most people's mindsets aren't like them when they're scrolling through Instagram. I'm sure there's loads of people whose are, by the way.
The reason why is because, well, first of all, social media offers a lot more of a democratic opportunity for people to volunteer narratives or inspirational quotes. But on the other hand, you don't necessarily see if these people are adhering to said quotes. And I guess because the one quote that the internet was missing was, don't try this at home. And so people are still learning to find the inspiration, how palatable they are. You know, a pinch of salt. That's the other thing we used to say as well. That was an inspirational quote that allowed us to, when we heard quotes in our actual reality, we were able to have discernment between said quotes and how much we adhere to them and how literally we take those, because we were able to create an idiom by saying, take it with a pinch of salt. So that we know that rather than you take it on board, then you need to kind of process this or make sure that it's seasoned before you take on, I guess, the meat and bones of the point. Whereas there's not an equivalent to a pinch of salt yet on social media. And I think that's what the problem is, Howard, is that people can offer inspirational quotes, but we don't know the perspective from which they're offering them. So when people say something like, you know, there's 24 hours in a day, but you're like, yeah, but your parents are in law enforcement. So if you do something in your 24 hours, that's bad, and I do something bad in my 24 hours, your 24 hours aren't going to be affected in the same way, because they're going to keep you out of prison. Or, you know, in the same way that if people were to spend a part of their 24 hours focusing on what they're supposed to do instead of indulging you on social media, you probably wouldn't have the platform that you would have. So I guess the issue is that we probably haven't had the breadth of time to see how these half truths that we receive in the form of inspirational quotes on social media will affect us. And like I said, we just need to create a form of, take it with a bit of cyber salt, Howard.
Yeah, well said.
That's all we've got to learn. When it comes to social media and toxic positivity, ladies and gentlemen, members of the non-binary community, always take it with a pinch of cyber salt.
I've got a bit of fact for you based on a pinch of salt.
Give it to us.
Did you know that Shakespeare has come up with a whole heap of quotes that he invented that we use in our everyday life? Did you know that?
I did know he had a few,
And he created a few words as well.
Like 1,700 words that he created, like phrases that were invented in his works, are words that we now use in our everyday life. Can I give you some?
Yeah, go for it.
Of course.
Right. So, in a pickle.
Nice.
Nice.
That was invented in Shakespeare. That's green-eyed monster.
Clever, yeah, very good.
Love is blind.
Wow, this guy was good, wasn't he?
Yeah, 1405, he wrote that. Bedazzled.
Nice.
These words didn't, like, these are all poetic words. He used cold-blooded.
Nice.
Which he used in Hamlet.
Which influences our legal system, because that's what premeditated murder is. So
we talk about, you know, we were talking about quotes and motivational quotes and phrases and things like that. I guess we're kind of moving towards like language. I just thought it was like really interesting that there was a time when Shakespeare almost made these kind of phrases and quotes within his plays. And now we just use them as normal in our everyday life.
He would have been massive on Instagram, wouldn't he, Dane? He would have been huge.
Massive.
He definitely would have been. But then at the same time, I imagine there would have been other detractors who would have been like, yeah, but, you know, who's he to tell the story of Othello? Is he a Moor? So
yeah, fair, you know, fair point.
I'm sure there were people that were Shakespeare detractors, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
haters, Shakespeare haters.
There's always haters. There's always going to be haters. it was very nice to hear you talk about that, Noah, and I have a newfound respect for inspirational quotes.
As long as you take them with a pinch of cyber salt, Howard.
Pinch of cyber salt.
In fact, make that kosher cyber salt, Howard.
Thank you very much. Yes, I do have that at home. It's good salt. Dane, it's over to you, buddy, for the final question of what has been a very, very entertaining episode.
Absolutely. Vivi, as a as somewhat of an artistic inspiration yourself, a singer, songwriter, and producer, my proverbial hat goes off to you. The context behind my question refers to a time which I refer to as the Dark Ages, where I believe that there was a point in time where creatives, particularly of color, particularly black women as creators, were somewhat obscured from public view for a very long time and had a lot of skewed opportunities. I say that to say this. I think about people like yourself, and then I think about people like, we also had Skin from Skunk and Nancy on our podcast as well. Mm. Shinga Shaniwa from the Noisettes.
Yeah,
We've had Jamelia on the podcast and stuff as well. And I mention these icons because not only were you singers or vocalists, but obviously being songwriters and producers, label owners, covering all bases. But I feel like, when I look at someone like yourself, who's like a label owner, who's a singer, songwriter, and producer, who's had success both in the US and in France, like, you've achieved what even today are considered marks of massive success within the music industry. And yet, maybe I feel like, and you can clarify for me, your flowers, the bouquet of flowers that you should have received probably aren't as big as they should be considering the achievements you've made. And this is one of the reasons why I made the show I did, Bamus, was to give flowers to those who have done a lot more inspiring and a lot more amazing work behind the scenes. But basically, what I want to ask you is, just based on your experiences and stuff as well, and given that now the internet, as we discussed, has provided an enormous new avenue of opportunity and expression for successors now that exist in this industry, where, you know, I look at people like LMI, who've had massive success in the States. But I still feel like for black musical creatives, we can go under the radar, and then you can see 20 years later, you can see a Amy Winehouse or an Adele enjoying this transatlantic success. So I want to ask you, how difficult or easy, depending on your perspective, do you still think it is for black women as vocalists? Because it's just a personal thing of mine where I'm just like, how come, for example, I look at the girls from Big Brothers and Cherise and like Nadia and them, and then they weren't big until they did this Booty Love song, which is like a dance remix. Or I look at, I think her name's Holly, but she was in the Ayo Technology video with Justin Timberlake and 50 Cent. But she was in a group called Times Four before that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, looking at people like yourself, like, you know, you're big in France, you had an album that was on the charts in the States, like, more people should be talking about this. And I just wonder why it doesn't happen, in your opinion.
Well, this is a really interesting question, and something that I've written about in The Guardian, and I'm very passionate about, and I kind of consult and work with young artists to try and empower them. I came into this industry in 2003. There was no MySpace, no Twitter, no Facebook, no nothing. It was just based on...
It had just been removed from the TV and had their tour shut down and that, as I recall, those times there. Hard times.
It was a really different time.
Mm.
And you really were in the hands of major labels and everything was about getting signed to a major label. Now, at the time, there wasn't a lot of black women getting signed in the same way that our white counterparts were getting signed. So it was very, I guess, disproportionate. And it was difficult. I feel very blessed that I was able to have a record deal, but the journey was definitely turbulent and difficult. Is it different now than what it was then? Yes, I believe that it is different, but there are still hurdles. There are still hurdles. I still believe that there is.
Did you hear about Ray?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I did. Yeah, I reached out to her. I think the problem is not, there are a lot of A&Rs who have good intentions, and there are a lot of people that have good intentions on signing artists. But the problem is in not understanding how to market us, understanding what, where our demographic is, or even down to back in the day, I remember going on fashion shoots and no one wanted to do my hair, or I was immediately told when I got signed that I should have a weave. And at the time, I'd never heard of a weave. I just had my natural hair as a little 17-year-old so that I would look more European. So I think it's more about the lack of understanding, the lack of knowing how to market us in this country. When I went to America, I couldn't believe there was this whole community that was supporting and lifting me up as an artist. I'll never forget walking into BET and the way that I felt, the way I felt included. I didn't feel like I was on the edge of the circle. Mm. Everyone always gets shocked when we say that we sold over a million records, like worldwide overseas.
Well, why do people not know that?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's platinum by America. Like, and another thing, a lot of people know the difference between record sales to achieve a platinum status in the UK versus the numbers you have to do to get platinum status in the US.
Yeah.
So that's a million copies. Like, and that's rare. That's like, that puts you in like, you know, the top fifth to one percentile of just musical artists in general.
No one really talked about the successes we had across seas. I see them as almost like silent successes. There was a lot of silent successes that there was never really any praise. I remember there's an amazing journalist called Matilda E. Cooper who did a fantastic piece in The Independent about this, where she talked about artists like Floetry, myself, like all these black artists that had gone over to America, like Estelle, for instance, with her working with Kanye.
Mm-hmm. Who was working with Kanye way before people had Kanye had the status that he had now.
Where they would go to the States and immediately they would get propelled. It's not only just artists. I know so many actresses, comedians who have gone over to America and it's kind of catapulted their career.
Well, you know, Naomi Harris was in Simon and the Witch.
Right.
I don't know if people remember that, but before she was in Pirates of the Caribbean, she was on a CBBC show. That's how far back she goes. Yeah. So
it's got a lot better. I don't want to complain and moan and, you know, speak as if I haven't had any opportunities, because I have, and I feel very blessed. But at the same time, there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, no, you don't cross as a bitter person. I just think it's really helpful, irrespective of gender, really, but to hear your perspective, especially because, you know, you were a success. And even though this has not been lauded very much in mainstream media or within your specific industry, you were massively successful. And so that's why I wanted to ask you, because it's like, even though there's a lot of work to be done and things have changed, there are people. And why I wanted to speak to you about it specifically as well, Vivi, is because I feel like there's a very homogenous aesthetic for black women as creatives. And it's very binary, where it's either quite this racially ambiguous with the weave and very hypersexualized, or it's like being asexual. And I say people all the time, it's like when you look behind an Ed Sheeran or an Adele or an Amy Winehouse, their backing singers are not white.
I've got this on my notes right here.
They're backing singers are not white. Like when Basement Jacks does their tunes, the vocalists they have as session artists are not white. So it's obviously clearly the vocal talent is understood by the industry at large. But what can we do to bring, especially artists that don't sit inside this very binary and homogenized aesthetic, like yourself or someone like Shingai or someone like Skin, you know, or someone like Jamili, who's also a songwriter as well, or even Ray, who's a prolific songwriter who was able to write for both like house music and R&B. How can we bring women like this to the fore and celebrate them?
We need to shatter this one in, one out rule. There's this very much Every year there's only this one black female artist that's the one of the year and is crowned as the soulful voice, you know, the ticking of the box. There's like a queue around the block of all of these incredible artists, black artists, female artists waiting. One comes in one year, then the next one comes in. You know, it was even me, Vivi Brown. Mm-hmm. Then the year before that, was it Karim Bailey Ray? Then the year before that, it was that if you actually analyze the journey of black female artists throughout the history of the UK music, you can clearly see it's very one in and one out. And we need to shatter that. I never forget, I went to radio back in the day when I was left in tears, was one of the radio presenters at the time. She came very close to the microphone and she said, after playing my track, I didn't really like that song because it was, I much prefer Janelle Monáe. Now, that's fine. Like in music, critiquing music is a part of what we do. It's art and culture. I wasn't upset by the critique because that's part of what we do. It's good as an artist to be critiqued and to be, you know, to be put under a microscope. It's good to have that humility and check yourself. And, you know, it's part of what we do. But no other artist was compared. It was just two black female artists then were compared, almost as if we can only have one. There has to be only choice of one.
And it's the only point of comparison, because it's funny. I had this when I was first trying to get signed to an agent. I had the same experience of people being like, two black guys on our comedy books. How could there be a variance in their narratives? 0.8 billion people, of course they must have the same narrative, no matter what part of the world they're from. They must do, you know, whereas like, you know, if you were to put an Arsenal and Tottenham supporter of European extraction in the same room and expect them to, they both like the same football team, don't they? They'd go fucking berserk and everyone would call you an idiot for everyone trying to compare those two supporters.
I tell you what, a common element to both of your experiences and takes on this is inadequate people on the other side of the table. That's what comes across to me. Like, as a producer of television, podcasts, whatever anyone wants me, you know, I like to think that, you know, when I properly, you know, like invest like time in someone, I kind of want to see that through to the end of, like, you know, let's do this thing. Because basically I think you know, we get along and we are like working with you. I like what you do. And let's, you know, but there's such a kind of transactional element for so many. It's become so transactional. Whereas you kind of, you think back to some of the great kind of producers in the history of media, you know, they massively invested emotionally and spiritually in the performer's work. And I think that happens less and less.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And another reason why I wanted to pose a question to you is because, you know, we'd spoken previously about inspirational quotes. And, you know, when you have a body of work which gives nuance and, you know, provides distinction to your life and your experiences and your aesthetic as someone that might be raised in the church, lives outside of like a metropolitan town like London, you know, I believe there are a number of black women, and not just black women, women of colour, who will have a similar experience. Yeah. And by them being able to listen to and indulge your narrative, it makes the world much easier for them to live with, especially when you're a woman trying to make sense of living within a patriarchal society. And so it's very strange, especially now where there's such an overt call for more, you know, feminist drives for representation, that this has not been kind of addressed. Because, you know, it's like, even I think, because again, for myself, it's kind of like, more people should know about what you've done, because it means people were able to step outside of a box. Because I always made it like a point of principle to, when I did have the stage as a black comic, to stay away from a lot of tropes and from a lot of stereotypical narratives, which people expect me to say. And I feel like, you know, you're very similar as an artist, that you've always, like, you've never taken a stereotypical approach to the subject matter you discuss and the things you talk about within your music. And it seems strange, especially for an industry that seems to be demanding that there is more positive representation from our community and more positive narratives that don't glorify or stylize, you know, negativity and violence, that historically artists such as yourselves have been marginalized for so long.
But the great thing is that I do believe things are getting much better. And I do think that in the last few years, it's been really exciting and really positive, where I feel like there's a real renaissance, there's a real revolution happening. And, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're a young person, black, brown, white, anybody. But, you know, I'm a black woman talking to another black woman out there. Be empowered and be creative and chase your dreams and do what you need to do. It's a really special time right now. You know, I think people's perceptions are being shifted. There's a real enlightenment in the air. There's a real togetherness of all people. And I think that there's something happening. I'm putting out a record next year, which is probably going to be the most uncompromised record I've ever put out, where every inch of my blackness, which has often been muted by this industry at times, is going to be coming out. I can't wait. Like, I might take this wig off at the end of the podcast because I'm trying to get rid of this.
There you go. That's a good name for a mixtape. I'm taking off this wig. VV Brown coming soon. I like that. I think you've been very. And can I just say as well, Vivi? I think that's very. What you've said a very inspirational thing, and it's been great. And I hope it does inspire our listeners. But can you stop being so humble? Be like this. Listen to me. Stay true to yourself. Because I saw them really in the US. Did you hear that? The US and France. And you know they hate us. You've heard of Eurovision. I overcame Eurovision and I overcame the US and I saw the motherfucking Millie. That's right. They call me VV Brown, but they should call me VV Platinum.
No, you got to keep it humble, man. You got to keep it. You got to.
Fine. I'll do it for you. You hear that? VV Platinum, baby. VV S Stones.
It's been a good episode, isn't it, Dane? We've had all sorts in this episode of just thinking back to our fictional dinner party.
Oh my god, that feels like a year ago.
We've had all of it.
That's good.
There you go. We've had three delectable courses of food for thought, as well as an actual and surreal banquet.
Ooh, the surreal banquet. Ooh, I like that.
That's it. There you go. See, you can have that name as well. For an
I like
EP.
It for this. That's the absolutely podcast. Yours. The podcast, the surreal banquet.
We'll do one, TV. We'll do one. How we'll produce. Okay. I'll get our producer friend to take care of it. Zero Banquet is where it's at. I'm making note of that. While I'm making notes of our amazing brainstorming session, VV, can I just thank you for coming on the podcast and being a long time supporter and now contributor. Where can our listeners find out more about your good
work? Well, you can check me out on vvbrown.com and of course on Instagram, which is vvbrownofficial, or my socials. If you click the link in my Instagram, you'll get through to my LinkedIn, which will open up a world of things. I've got a children's book. I'm doing the Say Something Collective. Like, there's a lot of stuff I do. I love Leonardo da Vinci, so I want to be the kind of artist that is just doing all kinds of stuff for all kind of times. Check me out, dive into my world, and send me a message. I love to talk to people, so I'd love to meet you.
There you go, guys. Fill your boots. That's just VV Brown just being down to earth, doing her thing, raising her kids.
Selling a million cookies, Brev.
Feeding my kids. Feeding my
That's
kids.
It. Feeding my kids a million That's times right. over.
Thanks again, VV. It's been a joy.
Thanks, VV. And please, you can harmonize us out of this. VV, thank you so much.
Yes,
pleasure.
Indeed.
And we'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste and myself, Howard Cohen. Our guest was VV Brown. You can follow VV on Instagram at VV Brown Official. For more from Dane and myself, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Dane Snaptiste and at The Howard Cohen. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a question for Dane, make sure you send us a DM on Instagram at DBQE Podcast, and we could feature you in our next episode. Thanks for listening, guys, and remember, question everything.
Insanity Group.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.